And here we are for another Blunt Force Gamers show for y'alls. This week we're going to be doing villains as suggested by Kazarkan, and then we're moving on to other topics that I totally forgot what they were.
Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
Okay, we're back.
Wow, that was fast.
I know, it's a lot shorter of an intro, only 20 seconds this time.
Thank you, Attention Span Games.
Yes, thank you, Attention Span Games, for that advice.
Yeah, it was fun and all with the medical warning, but it, 2 minutes of stuff. That's the sort of thing we can tack at the end.
Maybe, I don't know.
I still say it should be our channel description on YouTube, because you can put that one video up where it's like, click on the channel, bam.
Good idea. Anyway, we're doing villains today. So, for the first half of our episode, what's on the menu, Kazarkan?
Alright, so this subject is about a good villain. This is not a villain who does good, necessarily, although it could be. This is about a villain that exemplifies what evil smart is, as portrayed by our Lord Goblin. Now, this has a few aspects, but The first thing I've asked of everyone is pick about three villains from across video games, movies, comic books, lore of whatever type, and D&D, or another role-playing system. After that, I want each person to discuss what makes them a good villain, as opposed to evil stupid. Like, what their goals are, a little bit about them for those who aren't intimately familiar with them. And then, like, what makes them a good villain? Why are they a likable character for whatever reason? Even if it is a love-hate relationship.
Okie dokie. So, you want to start with it?
Sure. I'll shoot one and then pass it to you guys and get back to me on the other two, because The first one is from a book series I really love. And yes, it did get a show recently, and I don't dig it as much. It's still good, but American Gods, written by Neil Gaiman. You know.
Oh boy, this is familiar.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have heard me rant about it before, but for me, number one villain has got to be Odin. Because yes, he is the villain. Spoiler alert if you're only watching the show. Read the goddamn book. But Odin was a great villain, god of the gallows, you know, he thrives on death, that's dedicated to him. And what is a greater death than getting all the rest of the gods to kill each other in a war you mastermind and have all their deaths dedicated to you, when your power comes from people's belief? I mean, really, and he orchestrated it so well, he came off as, you know, was very concerned, you know, we are the old gods, let's do this. You know, to try and keep our hold on the world. We were here first, blah, blah, blah. We've seen the gods of the railroad rise and fall and, you know, all that stuff. And I mean, as a character himself, you know, he comes across very, you know, conniving, but you're like, all right, he's pretty, you know, basic about that. And then you get his backstory in one of the small Coming to America stories Neil Gaiman wrote in. Or you hear the other gods talk about him. And really, this whole thing, like, no one really knew that this is what Odin was doing until the end. And it was his own son, Shadow, the main character, that figured it all out. And, you know, he was a mastermind, but a likable character in the fact that he was just like, I'm an old man just trying to keep my way in the world. I'll make deals. I'll do what I have to do. And he was able to bring together our heroes and use them against themselves. So, I mean, that, for me, makes a really good villain when they're able to skirt under the radar. You know, even if they show up as a blip, you still don't think they're the main bad guy. Because he made everyone think, oh, it's Mr. World is the bad guy. And it turns out the whole time that was Loki. In the book, at least. The book is better. Read the book. But, you know, when I try to create villains, I've tried crafting one like that where they try to come off as the good guy. You know, because advice I took from you in one of Goblin's many rants is, just what, for being a bad guy, you want to play the lawful evil, then try and use a victim card. Try to portray yourself as someone who has been wronged, and the whole reason you're doing this, the whole thing that justifies it, is simply your own continued survival, you know.
That is definitely one way to play lawful evil.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and it just resonated with me. That whole book really stuck with me. I couldn't put it down when I first grabbed it.
Nice. Neato. Well, Goblin, you want to take the next one?
Yeah, sure, why not? Because I'm all about unrepentant, malevolent fucking evil.
All right.
I mean, evil as evil does. Like, I've thought about some of this, and the D&D one does throw me through a bit of a loop, and we'll get to that later. However, my first pick for an evil that really ramps it up would be Ming the fucking Merciless.
Ming!
I mean, this guy gets off on being evil. He enjoys the shit out of it. And, like, in the old serials, the comic books and stuff, it was toned down. And they did ramp it up ever so slightly, but still on the PG level. In the movie, Flash Gordon, Manimal. Anyway,
back in my day,
from the very opening scene, he's giggling and cackling as he's just attacking the shit out of Earth, pressing buttons to do horrible things like typhoons and earthquakes and shit from his lair of evil, and he's just enjoying the shit out of it. And if you do this guy wrong, his response is just so over the fucking top. The guy goes so far as to torture his own daughter, which is another happy memory of mine that helped me discover that I do like certain things about women in skin-tight outfits and torture scenes. But the guy is just so fucking malevolent about it. He just gets off on being evil, and just the slightest thing goes wrong, and he's just, the fuck, screw it. And just, he uses a baseball bat when you just need a fly swatter. That's what makes Ming so great, is he's just in your face, brutal, he doesn't fuck around.
Unrepentant.
He is unrepentant as shit, dude. As far as evil goes, I love Ming in almost every fucking form that he takes, whether it's in the comic books or the movies or even short audio serials. He's just always that guy you do not want to fuck with. You know he's going to enjoy beating the shit out of you once he gets a chance to get his hands on you. And then destroy everything you love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And possibly leave you alive to do it.
Yeah, Ming is the kind of guy who would leave you alive long enough to see everything you cherish destroyed. So, and he's unrepentant. He enjoys the shit out of what he does. So he's... I mean, if you were to put him in chaotic... In terms of D&D, like, his actions are totally chaotic evil. He just responds. But at the same token, he is a great emperor who's obviously leaning towards a lawful evil spectrum because he's always planning this shit out or he has things going on. You know, he wants order out of all of his people, so you can't really nail him down because
he's... So he sounds like he's neutral evil because he fits between the two.
I would say, yeah, neutral evil as far as D&D alignments go. But just the amount of sheer joy he gets out of doing what he does.
Someone says take pride in your work.
Yeah, he takes definitely pride in his work. And he's got snazzy fashion sense.
True. So much the better.
Yeah.
I guess that means ball's in my court.
Exactly.
Alright, so my first pick is from the video game series StarCraft II, you know, across all three arcs, and even into the first StarCraft he was alluded to. This character is named Amon. And Amon, or the Dark One, is a, lacking a better term, a cosmic deity. A member of a corrupted member of a progenitor race that has seeded countless galaxies and universes with life. Long story short, his people live through this multi-millennia cycle where they live in pairs in the universe that they created, and when the cycle draws to its close, the unity of purity of essence and purity of form will ascend into being the new Zelnaga, and those who were watching over the galaxy in their charge will pass on, become part of the next iteration. Amon saw this as a never-ending cycle of torment for all living things involved, because living is pain and suffering. So what he wants to do, wipe the slate and free all the living things that are in at least this iteration from the cycle, to break the mold and to exist beyond.
Hail Sithis.
A little bit, yeah. And, you know, as the story develops, you find that he has manipulated the Zerg faction very heavily, and the Protoss, because the Zelnaga have a strict no-hands policy. Set it in motion, sit back and watch. Nothing else. And Amon broke those tenets. He altered the fate of the Protoss. And yes, there is some spoilers in this if you haven't already caught on. He altered the fate of the Protoss deep in their history when he guided them to technological ascendancy and to their unifying psionic link, the Kala. And then after they rejected him, he moved on to the Zerg and hard set genetically modified creatures that he found and brought them to a ravenous weapon swarm horde. And it's governed by an Overmind, which he gave a hard-coded command, destroy the Protoss. So everything that the Overmind did had to be justified within that realm, or that lens. So to escape that, you know, when you've got a brain the size of the continental United States, and then some, you've got some processing power to work with. Especially, you know, even with the minutiae of overarching troop movement for billions of creatures. So what he did is he created a prodigy. The prodigy that is the Queen of Blades. To break free the mold. Long story short, Amon's been manipulating events all throughout this, and is only revealed in the tiniest last bit. So like Blasphemous was saying, you know, he's under the radar. There's blips. There's inklings. And as you like, if you watch this whole tapestry of a story, you can see that. But you have to reach the end before you're like, oh my god, it all makes sense. I like that about him. I like that he was uncaring, but at the same time, very caring. I would fit him maybe neutral evil, because he does, in the same way Ming does, he has a lot of plans going, a lot of manipulation in play. But at the same time, he's also reactive enough that it can, or it doesn't seem like he has much beyond the desire to break the cycle.
All right, round two.
Fight!
So, another one that's close to my heart. And to say he's a bad guy is to follow the main sort of storyline. But come on, in Star Wars, we all know the Jedi were the real bad guy.
Well, duh.
That being said, I would still choose Palpatine, which, if you're going to notice the pattern here, I find him to be more of a lawful evil person. Because he sought to make the galaxy correct and try and make things very succinct.
Orderly.
Orderly.
Palpatine did nothing wrong.
True. Because stretching back into the canon from what I've delved into, I'm going to do a mix of old and new canon because it seems to be where it fell out. Some of the old got picked up by the new. Palpatine started out just a ball of rage. Super chaotic, you know. He just wanted to rebel. Then he gets found by Darth Plagueis. And Darth Plagueis manipulates him, manipulates Palpatine, into killing his whole family in his pursuit of becoming a Sith. Then he gets brought under the wing of Darth Plagueis and picks up his training, and he's like, alright, the way to do this is to become the Chancellor of the Republic. So he follows through, and he connives and manipulates and moves in the power circle until the perfect pawn appears, which is his homeworld of Naboo. And he sets things up so that he can fast-track himself to becoming the new Chancellor. And the whole reason he built the Death Stars from the canon, I remember, is he was so powerful in the Force that he was given a Force vision of the Uzon Vong. Great threat coming to the galaxy. They have planet-sized ships, so let's get a planet-sized gut. No moon.
Yeah. Then Disney killed that idea real quick.
Yeah. Death to the mousy emperor. But anyways, so Palpatine, he was very conniving, very manipulative of other people. And he had plans within plans and backups within backups. Like an old canon, when he died on Death Star 2, he had already set a plan in motion to try and attain some sort of immortality by simply body hopping to cloned bodies of himself he had stashed all around the galaxy. And he still retained a lot of his power, because in the old story, he was able to pull Luke into the dark side for a short time. And he still was able to summon Force lightning and Force storms and all that. Palpatine still just, you know, was like, I will do this. I am the Emperor. And, you know, really good storyline. I highly recommend reading the old books about Palpatine. The whole story arc with him is great. But when it comes to a bad guy, I kind of like these somewhat manipulative big power hitters, because they just get other people to do their work for them. A little bit of convincing, maybe a little bribery. Convince them that it's the right thing to do. It just works out so well. And, yeah, that's kind of most of what I got on Palpatine.
Alright, well, my second choice is kind of contended. And, I mean, I could swing towards the Cthulhu mythos real easy on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But the overwhelming evil kind of aspect, it's been done. It's a tried and true method.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one that's kind of overlooked and I'm going to default to, other than Cthulhu Mythos, would be more of a tragic evil. The bad guy who is a bad guy, but he's not a bad guy because he is a bad guy because bad shit happened, mm-hmm. which made him a bad guy, which he was a bad guy before, but not really a bad guy.
It sounds a little bit like Wreck-It Ralph.
Kind of. Actually, what I'm talking about is Dracula.
Ah.
From the old Bram Stoker novels.
Vlad Dracul.
If you had a chance to read the book, it's slow, it's ponderous, the action scenes are but it is a look back in time of a different writing style entirely anyway. However, Vlad's entire motivation is trying to get back what he had lost. So, I mean, if you go into the movie adaptation of that and everything, it explains also a bit of the story in depth as well, that Mina looks just like the woman that committed suicide after he came home from fighting, and she's dead, and he's like, what the fuck, God? I've been doing all this work for you, and you allow the love of my life to die? So he curses God, and God's like, screw you, dude. And so Vlad is cursed to walk outside of the gaze of God and becomes a creature of the night, and that's his punishment, his eternal torment, because now God has turned his back on him, and the love of his life is dead, and he's left to suffer in a castle until one day somebody who looks amazingly like the love of his life shows up, and a force of darkness by hell and high water wants what he's lost. So he's really more of a tragic evil than a force of malevolence. It's actually, if you look at it, one of the best love stories ever written, and way better than Twilight.
That's kind of set the bar high.
I know it's not set the bar high.
Like the baby hops.
It's the baby
hops. When you're just starting, you know, jump roping or some stupid shit like that.
True that.
It's where you're just kind of pacing yourself.
However, though, the romantic evil, the romanticized evil, really did take a big change in that era when the book was written and published, and vampires became less creepy, slinky things with overly long fingers. They crawled through the shadows and became a more of a
humanized,
very humanized force. And a lot of that has come out in play in today's different forms of media.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of books, television, movies, role-playing games, all this stuff. They all have a vampire in there who's lost something, and they still are tugged between darkness and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that flavor of that book, it really did change a lot of the setting for a lot of the villains in media forms later on, especially the vampire form.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to go with the tragic evil in this one, because it is, when you read the book, it is a very powerful story, the way it's all spelled out, how tormented this soul is, and the only way he can get what he wants back is through violence.
Not exactly a very fun way to do it.
Not a very fun way to do it. So yeah, it's all he wanted. He just wanted what he was owed and couldn't get it. So I believe I'm going to throw the rope back to you, Kazrakan.
Oh, well, let me just tie the knot right up here. Anyhow, the next choice I've got is also from video games. This one is Handsome Jack, infamous from the Borderlands 2, and to a darker kind of more hidden extent, Borderlands as well. Because we didn't realize it in the first part of the Borderlands series, the first Borderlands game, but he was manipulating things through Angel all throughout this. Now, Handsome Jack is, for those who aren't familiar with him, is the current CEO of the Hyperion Corporation. They're responsible for a whole pile of shit, but they're basically a gun manufacturer and a respawn provider. That's how it plays out in the game.
Shit, I could use a respawn provider.
But what makes Jack interesting is the fact that he is an unbridled asshole. Instinctively so. And, in fact, for those of you who aren't familiar with what I mean, I strongly encourage you to go look up Handsome Jack's spoon quote. Like a 54-second audio blip that happens while the rest of the game is being played. And it's fucking hilarious, for one. But for another, you know, it tells you a lot about his personality as an individual, that he's a very dark person. He will do anything to get what he needs to do. Absolutely anything. Including, spoiler alert, forcing his own daughter to embrace her siren powers and pump her full of a known toxic substance in such quantities that would make oil veins look like a kiddie straw. Literally draining an entire planet worth of iridium to shove in a liquid, refined form into his daughter to accomplish his goals. Yes, that is a thing.
Now I'm just trying to figure out the physics of pumping more mass into a container of flesh.
It's a long period of time.
Okay.
I'm just going to cut that off right here.
Okay.
And, you know, it's only a little bit later that you realize he's trying to terraform the planet into something that he can pose as a new little pocket of heaven, you know? In his own symbolically twisted way, yes. He's trying to build a colonizable planet out of a barren shithole of a world, plus or minus. And he's doing that, and unfortunately for all the locals, that makes him the bad guy. Even if it's not necessarily all evilly intended. Now, what I like about Handsome Jack is he is a very lawful evil character. Very lawful evil. But his interactions with the player are mainly through audio only, and the glimpses that you get of him in his past show that he was a very chaotic entity, even with this overriding plan. So he's kind of another weird one. But what I like about him is his sense of humor is on point and distinctively fucked up, but, you know, that is that. And constantly deliberately antagonistic to the players, but not really doing anything to stop them, per se. You get things like, why the hell are these stupid Vault Hunters still alive? I'm like, well, dude, you're overlooking something. They're paying you for respawn services. All you gotta do is cut them off, and your problem is over. He doesn't seem to think on that. So that's my thought on that. I like him because in his own weird way, he shows humanity. The password to get into the bunker where you meet Ariel, or Angel, is, I love you, in Handsome Jack's voice. It is still his daughter. In his own fucked up way, he still loves his daughter. And, like, you get this brief little glimpse of his humanity in those moments where she is directly interacting with the player.
So, number three. I'm gonna have to default to Magic the Gathering here.
Okay.
Especially considering recent storyline, Nicol Bolas is one of the better bad guys. I mean, hell, I've got his pop figure over there. I have all three versions of him, or four, because I've got the OG with the original art. Nicol Bolas, the Elder Dragon Planeswalker, has been a bad guy in Magic for a long time. He originally, well, as far as I can remember, it's been a while since I read the story, sparked the original Dragon War in the multiverse, which created the several different types of dragons, you know, and dragon-related cultures. And basically, he killed off every other elder dragon. To the best of my knowledge, none of them are still alive. And he has done more than that, because when he became a planeswalker, he was basically a god. He could create and destroy realms almost with a snap of his fingers. And then the mending happened, where planeswalkers lost their uber godlike abilities and they were no longer immortal. Well, he's a dragon. He's pretty much going to live until someone slays him. And so he has sought entirely to get back to that power level. One of his first attempts was simply to tie up the mana ley lines across a certain portion of, I think it was Dominaria, where he ruled as a emperor. And it was a Japanese-themed deal, and in that story, Nicol Bolas was destroyed. His body was destroyed, and they went into a pocket dimension where Nicol Bolas' spirit could exist, and was destroyed there. Somehow he came back. I'm still missing that part of the story. Then,
because he's also Ugin? Spoiler.
Yeah, we're waiting on that. So Nicol Bolas comes back into story, and the plane of Alara, which was broken apart into the shards of Alara, which were five planes that only had access to three of the five mana colors each. They were all different combos. Well, he's there because that realm is basically healing itself. Alara is reborn, it's reforming, coming together. And in that conflux of these worlds that have now existed without each other coming back together, there's a great amount of mana, magical power. He tries to get at that. Well, he pisses off a Johnny, recently ignited planeswalker at the time, and a Johnny pulls out this really great ability where he uses the mana of the conflux to create a clone of Nicol Bolas, and Nicol Bolas fights the clone and is driven off. So Nicol Bolas has lost his fair share, but recently in storyline he's won a great victory. The combined might of the planeswalkers went to fight Nicol Bolas on the world of Amonkhet and lost. Nicol Bolas basically reached out and was like, yeah, good luck. He basically triggered Jace's mind sculpting thing on himself and made him mind sculpt and jump to a plane where he couldn't escape until, storyline permitting, he will stay there. He made Chandra basically disappear onto another plane. He hurt Gideon, who was indestructible, basically, and sent him to another plane. Literally just talked to Liliana and was like, get the hell out of here. We'll talk later. You know, made Nyssa basically lose her ability to tap into the mana at the time. He's just one of those guys where he's got plans and backups and he will keep working on stuff. He's finally getting some W's on the board. But, you know, he's one of those bad guys that is just persistence. He will outlast and outlive because he's a damn near immortal dragon planeswalker, so he can jump around. But, you know, definitely looking at the spectrum, he's more of a, I'd almost want to say on the neutral evil spectrum, or edge of the spectrum.
Neutral evil sounds appropriate for Nicol Bolas.
Yeah.
It is all his plans and his interests.
Mm-hmm. He may slightly want to rule the multiverse, but he's no Yawgmoth. You know, he's not seeking to conquer to conquer. He's seeking to gain power to become a planeswalker god again and be able to create new realms and destroy stuff like no tomorrow. I mean, hell, he sent people to Zendikar to unleash the Eldrazi Titans, which were damn near unstoppable until a really crappy storyline where apparently no one ever tried fire. Apparently that's all it takes to kill an Eldrazi is lots and lots of fire.
Well, I mean, there's a line of thought to that. Like, if you throw enough fire at something, it will die. The only exception to this is fire elemental.
And how many years have I been telling you that with enough fire you can cure anything? Right?
Or one of my high school buddies would used to say, with the proper application and plenty of, C4 will solve all problems.
Yeah, but the blast radius is only 10 feet.
And we're back to that.
We're back to that.
You know, I remember us going over and over about how in D&D Modern, blast radius is 10 feet, but I never heard what the damage dealt would be if you were caught in that.
Yeah, it was pretty heinous.
Something like multiple.
Anyway, the...
It was a structure buster.
Rattle, 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 rattle. I'm talking here. The next evil that I have in mind actually comes from a D&D story I read recently. The player in the story joins new group. Everybody makes OP anthro characters anime-based bullshit. New guy goes by the book. Doesn't understand, you know, before a game that the party was a bunch of kids who just wanted to play power fantasy. Player then writes a book, and he wrote in this book both in character and out of character. He was keeping a journal. Name, date, cause of death, where they died, all the information he could collect on him. And if there was no name to collect, you know, say you kill a couple of trolls or something, he'd still take down notes as to where they died, how they died, all that stuff. And this proceeded for a few months. Eventually, the group gets into another conflict, and they're about to take on this Dracula Lich and shit. And the big-ass barbarian turns on him. And of course, again, power fantasy characters. So the big-ass barbarian could kill player characters, character real easy. And then the shit hits the fan. Because the player character became basically the item creation mage for the rest of the group. So he's been creating items for everybody. Hey, you want a new shield? Hey, I'll only charge you 3/4 of market value. And he'd make them the shield. Somebody wants a new fancy other item? 3/4 market value, he'll build that item. So he was basically the group's walking arsenal power supply whenever they needed a new item. Well, when the big-ass barbarian turned on him and said, hey, your share of the dragon's loot, you're not getting. It's going to us instead. And by the way, we want the money that we paid you to build our magic item. So player character says magic word. Next thing the rest of the party knows is their magical gear is turning against them. Suddenly the barbarian is trying to fight off his own axe. The rogue's armor is trying to impale him. You know, that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
All of their gear turns against them in a wondrous blaze of death. And the player, straight-faced, opens up his journal, both in character and out of character, and reads page 1. Recites the name of each of the other player characters at the table and the cause of death. And he basically says, I knew your greed would get the best of you. I knew you would want whatever you could take from me. And if you could have kept yourself in check, you would still be alive today. It's like, holy shit. Because the guy was playing a lawful evil wizard. But he wasn't going, you know, full tilt, I'm evil, muahahaha. He just wanted what was best for himself and to manipulate the events so that he could retire comfortably to some island. But the rest of the group basically turned into a bunch of cheesy greed monkeys and decided that they wanted to fuck him over. And, well, that's one reason you don't trust a sneaky bastard when they make you your magic items. Or at least you don't turn on the guy who's made you your magic items.
It'll come back and haunt your ass.
Yeah, it'll come back and haunt your ass, and it was really awesome the way that worked out. So, as far as a D&D example goes, the really sneaky, under-the-radar evil plays best in the overt I'm going to screw everything and stab out their eyeballs kind of evil. Because this guy, he was playing an evil character. He just, like most people in any society, you know, because the way that they have alignments written in that game, and in several other games, evil cannot coexist. They're all too busy trying to screw each other over, but that is counterintuitive to the biological impulse to survive and breed. So any society that's considered evil by the way they usually write a roleplay book doesn't work. And this guy was playing it straight up like it's supposed to be. He's got a great end goal in mind. He knows what he wants. He wants to retire. He understands he's mortal. And he also understands that to achieve his goals, he's going to have to work with other people. He just can't run around being a murder monkey about it. But if shit hits the fan, he's got a plan. And it was right there in page one in his journal.
That's definitely an impressive story.
I mean, imagine that. You're a player sitting at the table. The rest of your group turns against this guy, and he says a magical word. And then, of course, you're siding with him, so you get killed. And the player himself opens the journal and begins reading your death several months after and calls you out exactly for what you were going to do. That is, like, a huge bravo.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's round of applause level.
Mm-hmm.
That's some good role-playing there.
Totally exactly. Good role-playing. All right, I believe you got one more, Kaz?
I do.
We have 6 minutes before break.
All right, I'll try to keep this quick.
Okie dokie.
Now, this last one is a character of my own division. I made him in response to what would have been an evil-only campaign. This was like 3.5, D&D, Book of Vile Darkness, things like that. Fairly high level. I think it was like level 15 or something. And I had created a plague, a vermin master, basically. Someone who dealt in disease extensively. Now, this character's backstory was, you know, influenced by the why did you turn to evil question, which for him was to save his wife. His wife had gotten some kind of malignantly uncurable disease with a slow, drawn-out death attached to it. Probably painful. We never actually got that far into the story arc.
Oh, it was horrific.
Yeah.
Internal bleeding. Convulsions. Yeah, it was nasty, dude. Oh, wait, I wasn't there.
Now, the thing about this is, I had built this character as the party healer, and he was a good healer. He was an apothecary, and also a brewmaster. So what I had done is I had invested his starting wealth into a little bit of gear for himself, including, like, some glamoured scale mail or something, and a combination apothecary shop and brewery that he would run. That kind of, you know, he would keep it more or less on wheels, like basically RV trucking around the state to, you know, do stuff. And how he would enact his evil was he would poison his antidotes in such a way that, like, oh, you're coming to me for a cure for gout. Okay, well, I have a potion for that. It'll be this much, and this is what it'll do for you. It'll cure your gout. You'll, you know, it'll solve all that. But unbeknownst to the potential victim, is that it contained seeds for a different disease, say, crabs or something.
Crabs?
I don't know.
Okay.
Or tapeworms or something. Some other malady that wasn't necessarily going to kill them. But what he would do is he would do this to both the brews that he made, so the alcoholic beverages, you know, and this was a brilliant business scheme on his part, was, well, they're going to come to me anyway. If there's, and sick people tend to want to get drunk because they don't want to remember the fact that they're sick. We'll do both. So it was literally, here's something for your sickness, and here's something for your other sickness. And he would use entire cities as his petri dish, following the logic that the more that he can learn about disease, how it's transmitted, how it's cured, what problems happen with diseases, and why, the closer he is to finding a cure for his wife. And, by extension, the populace at large.
Did he never think that clerics have a spell called Cure Disease?
That's the thing. This particular disease was resistant to it. Extremely resistant. It was a plague that nobody understood. So he was more or less the forefront of the research, even though he wasn't talking about his work yet. Because, like, paladins and clerics and, you know, all sorts of stuff, he followed the same kind of arc that Doctor Strange did in the comic books and the movies that have been coming out. He loses everything in the pursuit of returning what he has lost. Now, granting, he hasn't quite lost his wife yet, but he's been apothecary for years. He knows that nothing he's doing, nothing the clerics are doing, nothing that anyone is doing has done fuck all shit for this. So he's investigating it in a way that, yes, he's not thrilled about, but it's still his data that he is using with the intent to save lives, specifically his wife.
All right, well, we have very few moments left, so just before break, I'm going to let all of our listeners know the reason why we're going over villains is for, of course, your own story and creation ideas. So if you want to build a better villain, we've just discussed 9 different types of villains. Well, 9 different examples of villains. These are the traits that we've picked out as being the best from our collective roleplay and media experience. So next time you're making a villain for your game, consider one of the examples as kind of a baseboard to spring off of. And with that, it's time for a little break time music.
Hey, come on.
So we're back. You guys ready to get maliciously angry?
Yeah, I was just jamming out to the music there.
Yeah, I know, just jamming out to the music. I didn't even edit that in yet. How do you guys hear it? That's amazing. All right, so for our listeners here on episode 3, the last 2 episodes, yes, they were kind of non-customary. I mean, shout out to the Hooligoons. If you like both hip-hop and nerdy shit, give them our first podcast this season to listen. That was a really excellent podcast, and we did RadCon, but now we're getting back into our standard, and we took a break for a little while there, and a lot of shit happened last holiday season.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Let the bells toll.
Let the bells toll. All right. So yeah, so much happened, and like I told these guys a moment ago, like the top 4 on my list is the Feminids invading Warhammer 40K. Sargon has gone on about that for quite a bit. And they just keep fucking things up, man. Even today I read an article that they're moving in on the beer industry, like coming in like a pack of fucking fleshy alien ripoff things and screaming with their blue hair to take something over, and they did that to Warhammer 40K. They come in, why aren't there any, you know, powerful, strong women in Warhammer? And it's like,
no, remember, they're called Whammon.
Oh, Whammons. Okay, whatever. Just fucking A, dude. They march in, they demand a bunch of concessions be made, screw the market up, and then leave. The comic book industry is still reeling from this bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Now, this sounds like they are misogynist, not feminist. Actually about equality, not men are inferior. Trounce upon them.
Well, it certainly, yeah, it seems like they're just marching in and saying the other gender is inferior now. At least their true colors are finally showing.
They've been showing for a while.
Oh, yeah. So we've got that. EA's done fucked up again. Oh, yeah. I almost forgot. Bethesda fucked up again.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh.
That's going to be a fun story.
Oh, yeah, well, Bethesda needs to pull their heads out of their collective accident. I don't place the blame entirely on Bethesda, but I do definitely point an accusing finger at ZeniMax Studios, because ultimately, in the end, they have to say over what God Howard says and does to the public. There was that. There was, of course, Star Wars.
Dun, dun.
Yeah, what a fucking tragedy shit show that turned into. And on that related topic, fucking, I'm playing Star Wars Galaxy at War, whatever, the mobile game. And they just recently released Admiral Gender Studies and Rose Tico as playable characters in that game. Nobody wants them, for the most part. I checked the forums, and everybody's like, we don't want these useless characters. We'd rather have Jar Jar Binks. I'm like, fuck, that's brutal. And then, you know, I do some background checking and shit, and apparently Jar Jar Binks is now more popular than some of the new characters in the new canon. That's pretty fucked up, considering the latest Star Wars movie that came out, too, is also ranked below Phantom Menace.
Ouch.
Yeah, so we missed a lot of stuff going on here. Magic the Gathering had their Pedogate shit.
Oh, God. With,
yeah, Blasphemous was monitoring that for a while there, and that was a shit show and a half.
Yeah, all the stuff going on with that, just...
Any new updates?
Well, a big thing we got going on is Magic has decided to start going after people who were whistleblowers.
What the fuck?
Yeah, Unsleeved Media, formerly MTG headquarters, went on about how a couple of other people who were involved in that and helping to find stuff have been now basically put on the chopping block for bannings. And, you know, I need to dig more into it, but overall it seems to be that they blew the whistle on something that happened because, well, they were like, all right, we're going to make sure people are following the rules. And they had people looking into it and like, yeah, I've known this for a while and no one's done anything. I brought it up to the proper authorities and nothing about how these judges and store owners have been convicted and they're still running in those circles. Hell, a couple of the people that were judges were still judging events, like GPs and shit. And just a whole lot of creepy and nastiness where it's like, yeah, these guys are convicted more than 2 or 3 years ago and they're still in the community. If you're going to kick people out, kick those guys out, because general safety, I mean, we try to police our own group in my group of Magic players where, like, if someone's getting a little too creepy or something, we're just like, hey, you know, we're watching you.
Well, yeah, because from my experience of being behind the counter, that was definitely a concern that we had at the shop sometimes, is if you get some guy in there who's definitely a fucking knuckle-dragging mouth breather, and he starts, you know, playing games of Magic with the kids, preferably overall, it's kind of a sign to watch the guy just in case, you know. Mm-hmm. And if somebody did make a move,
intervene.
We'd be like hot shit, dude. We'd be all over that.
Yeah.
You know, just like flies on shit, dude. They cannot have that in the store. And the Magic community, like you're saying, you know, these whistleblowers are the ones getting punished. That's like saying that me, who's standing sentinel behind the counter to make sure that anybody who's underage is safe, I'm the one getting punished. That's not right.
No. Not at all. I mean, like, I understand trying to police your own community. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
And, in fact, admirable. But, you know, at the same time, when the resource that you're trying to reach out to get things to happen that are outside of your power, like the removal of people who are a potential danger, and they're not doing it, then that is a failure.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. So, yeah, there's the Magic Pedogate thing, Zenimax fucking... The fucking Creation Club lights me up. You know, I would like to just beat the shit out of Wizards of the Coast all the more, but that is just... That's something, a topic that we're going to have to definitely research more into so we can actually, like, just do an entire episode on how serious it is.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'm trying to change the topic back to first world problems like Zenimax. Because that is a deep and heavy topic to get into, and it's a very serious one.
Mm-hmm.
And more than Zenimax, the guys and gals at Wizards need to pull their head out of their collective asses and stop playing whatever fucking game they're doing.
Right.
Because I don't know.
Well, they're doing more than just that. They're also screwing people by this last year we had where they were basically putting out more product than people could afford. And it goes more into that in this next, was it here in June? They have product releasing every week.
Yeah, yeah, and I've heard about
that. It's more product than, you know, a lot of the rest of the year. And I'm just like, unless you are made of money, not everyone's going to be able to get in on everything at once. You know, space stuff out, but...
I think they're trying to capitalize on the fact that the market has turned from a bear market more towards a bull market.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just looking at numbers and being like, ooh, we can make so much more money now that people are actually, you know, the recession is over for the most part. Let's just fucking milk them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to the point where I, because of reasons outside of regular life, I'm giving up on Magic. I'm selling my collection. You know, I'll play a few decks that I'm going to keep, but other than that, I don't plan on buying anything this year. I'm selling my collection.
I haven't bought Magic since I left the shop, and even when I was at the shop, I wasn't buying very much. And most of it is the product quality has just kind of tanked. And I'm not talking about the physical product quality, but the actual mechanical quality. Some of the new things that they add to the game, some of the new abilities.
The mechanics are getting worse.
There's a lot of changes going on with that that I'm just like, I want a good Magic game that feels like chess.
Yeah.
I want to sit down for 45 minutes with somebody and try to outthink them and outmaneuver them and not just be like the first one to deal 20 damage by turn 3.
Right, or conversely, the one to get the biggest army out fastest.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's a very real strategy, let's just be honest.
Well,
but it's like, you know, I could, like, one of my favorite decks that I've got, that I made, was back in Innistrad block. You know, the transforming werewolves. Mm-hmm. I've got a wolf and werewolf deck that I'm quite proud of. Only because, you know, it's fairly well balanced, and that's something I haven't achieved before in decks that I had made myself. But as I went on with this, it, you know, I'd love to play that deck, but its main strategy is just kind of erupt out creatures. Not necessarily violently or suddenly, but just kind of a constant stream of new creatures. And then, like, wait a turn, they all turn into gigantic monsters, and they don't turn back. And
that
then
sounds
you just
a lot
start
like,
beating
people
with.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like my beast deck. Just continually throwing creatures out there to make my opponent go, what the hell? Just every turn, two or more, three more beasts just hitting the table. And most of the time for free. That's a lot.
Well, as someone who has played a whole lot of EDH, which is the prevailing format at our local LGS, what I'm getting really tired of is our meta is really broken. If it's not blue... Pretty much blue and artifacts are the main thing. People are just playing really hard control decks and like, well, just run answers. It's like, no, I built this really sort of janky deck for fun, and yeah, we're playing FNM, which is when I usually bring out goblins, which is, oh, getting a soul ring out on turn one, everyone just targets me, and it's hilarious. But I mean, like, one of my favorite games I played, and I lost this game bad, was this kid at the shop. He's been playing there for years. He's famous for a few decks. In EDH, he went and did dinos, and he pulled off infinite polyraptors because he had, he had Eldrazi Monument out, the Forerunner of the Empire, which lets you search up, and whenever a dino enters, it deals one damage.
Yeah.
And then he searched up his Polyraptor, played the Eldrazi Monument. Eldrazi Monument sat around for a turn. No one messed with it. And then he played Polyraptor and was like, infinite dinos? And we're like, all right, you have to choose a number because it does have a May thing on it. And I'm like, you know what, just pull out all of your D10s because he has this like fishing box full of dice. And I'm like, pull out every D10. And pick a number. He put all of them to nines, and it was like a couple billion five fives.
Yeah.
And it was like, dude, that is awesome. And it went around the table. No one had answers. And finally, it's my turn right before his, and I'm like, you know what? I don't even care. I want to die this way. This is great. And it happened. You know, I do infinite squirrels. It can happen on turn three, but...
I do like to look on people's faces when, you know, I've had it happen to me and I've done it to other people. And you're like, how much damage do you want to take? But at the same token, like, I did it with my Jund deck one time as, I ran up on my opponent with a 3,000-3,002. You know, power and toughness kind of creature. Just run up on him because I just ate all these tokens with one creature that had Devour. Ran up on him and he took everything he had and just chump blocked the shit out of it. And he managed to survive that attack. And then I'm like, oh yeah, Soulspire, take 3,000. And he's like, God damn it. But I have hit combos where people are like, how much do you want to take? And I'm like, explain the combo, please. And they'll point it out. And I'm like, okay, dude, I take 21 damage. That's enough to kill me. You're done. You win. Yeah, if it's a May ability, though. Also, that we missed out on, who wants to talk about Star Wars?
Ooh. Oh, God.
Who wants to talk about the new awesome episode of Star Wars that just was released last winter and is soon to be coming to DVD and Blu-ray?
Really soon.
Really soon. Oh, my God. That turnaround rate is abnormally short. But, hey, it was a great movie, wasn't it? We got to see Leia Organa fly through the crushing void of space. We've got to see all the main characters who established last movie get sidelined by the new Stronk characters. We got to see Poe Dameron get emasculated repeatedly. I mean, come on. It sounds like the great makers of the movie. I mean, if, spoiler alert, Skywalker dies, and in the most poetic way possible, after Yoda just goes, ha, burn it all down. Oh my God, Yoda should have been wearing Mickey Mouse ears when he did that scene. Yeah. Now that I think about it, Yoda should have just been wearing a Mickey Mouse hat when he just lightning bolted the Jedi tree and said, fucking burn it all down. Screw the Jedi Order. And of course, you know, the Mary Sue, she was the last earthbender.
Mm-hmm.
Totally earthbending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Surely you thought the movie was great, too.
I have spent hours upon hours to the point that I got yelled at work for complaining about this movie to other people. And even people who were originally against me joined my side when I was like, look, it's nothing against the actors or any of the stuff, you know, diverse, whatever. I don't care. Just give me a good storyline. It didn't have that. A shit storyline is all we got.
And, like... This is another big thing. It's like, the action sequences were phenomenal, right? There's a scene in there where, you know, spoilers, Rey and Ren are kicking ass against Imperial Elite Guard, or whatever. That's an awesome scene. It's a fantastically done scene. The choreography is wonderful. But, the writing makes it feel like someone, you know, stuck someone to the front of a steamroller, ran them over at 90 miles an hour with the steamroller and against the asphalt that's already out. So they're getting rug burned on both sides. It's just...
I think that's a bit critically harsh. It's such a fantastic movie that had phenomenal right.
Swear to God.
With in-depth characters. I mean, like, Admiral Gender Studies was a great character. The way she just turned Poe over her knee and spanked him for being such a fucktard.
Oh, you mean the cardboard cutout?
And let's not forget the positive message after he went to go sacrifice himself in the end battle and Rose Tico, without considering any sort of consent, kissed him.
Yeah, he did not give consent.
He did not give consent, but you know what? Her love overpowers all. She stole his moment of valor to remind him what is most important on the battlefield.
Love.
And I couldn't do it. I couldn't keep a straight face.
I'm having a hard time actually talking the movie up.
You know, I don't blame any of the actors.
It's not their fault.
I don't blame anyone other than the director and the writers.
Yep. You know what? I'm going to add another source of blame on this. The market and the mouse-eared overlord.
The Mousy Overlord, whatever her fucking name is.
It's hardly relevant.
No, it's very relevant. She's like a power player in the Hollywood market. Just unlike Weinstein, she's probably not going to get accused of having a casting couch.
Mm-hmm.
She probably forces them to do other things entirely to get their roles or some shit. I don't know. Fucking Hollywood is a goddamn mess. But fucking, no, I blame her, whatever her fucking name is. It's just, she's so atrocious, I don't even want to remember her name.
I'm going with the aspect that there's no point in naming something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, the director...
evil enough to gather power on its own.
Yeah, the director fucked the pooch on this one hardcore.
To the fact that he got fired from what was going to be his trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the director fucked up hardcore. The writers, they were working with what they were given. They're just doing what they're told. Basically...
Yes, which, you know, which is why I'm not exactly wholly blaming the writers and the director.
Basically,
I'm blaming the overarching market that forced their hand.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, they're given a choice of scripts that are laid out at the table, and the people who want to make a movie choose one of the scripts. So.
And that's the problem.
Am I going to have to eat one of the horrible jelly beans since I kept interfering with you talking there? Okay. No jelly bean of
Wait,
shame?
Don't you still have the juice of shame in the fridge?
Oh, God, that shit's got to be rancid by now. It's like 8 months old. No, Star Wars...
I might make you do one of those later.
Ugh. I have yet to clean the container out. It's just I'm too lazy.
It's sitting in the fridge.
Yeah, it's been
Every
sitting
time
in
I see
the...
it, I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I was going to clean that out when I was working on stuff. And I'm like, the juice of shame, screw it. I got jelly beans of shame. So if anybody screws up on this season's podcast, they can just have a jelly bean and guess whether it's mint or grass clippings.
That was not bad. It's the vomit one that got me.
Oh, yeah, or vomit flavored. Or popcorn. It's a surprise. But, which oddly, ironically enough, loops back into Star Wars when you're sitting in the theater and you're eating popcorn, but all you can taste is vomit from what you're seeing on the screen. But I will give the new Star Wars one big thing of credit. Mm. It has been so fucking meme-worthy.
Oh, yes. The memes have been dank.
The
memes have been very wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, on the other side, it was a good science fantasy film.
I couldn't
In the
that.
Regard that it was entertaining.
No.
It did not do justice to the Star Wars or to any of the characters that were within it.
No, I'm sorry, but I have to disagree on that one. If you peel the word Star Wars off the movie title, it would have gone nowhere.
It would have been maybe a C-level movie, but it would have been
an
entertaining C-level movie.
It would have been a high budget, late night sci-fi flick, at best, if you peel the word Star Wars off it.
You know, all I think about is, at first I was laughing at Star Trek. For STD, you know. Star Trek Diversity.
Ugh.
And I'm just like, oh god, karma is a... Because we got one of the worst piles.
Oh, that's one thing we kind of didn't
you know,
get the podcast on with Star Trek.
Oh god.
And how bad it's gotten.
I couldn't make it through episode 2.
You know what? All I can say about that is, thank you for the Orville.
Yes.
I know, right? I'm like,
Thank
that
the gods.
Sounds like a way more fun show. It's clearly the fuck-up captain.
When a parody is better than the
Core?
Source material it's based off of. I do give the guys at the Orville credit. Actually, one of the episodes really was super deep. And I don't know how much of the audience really caught on to how deep that episode was. It was the one where Bortus... Yeah, Bortus.
Mm-hmm.
And his... partner have an egg, and after the egg hatches they realize they have a daughter, but in their society having daughters is bad.
Well, it's super uncommon.
Super uncommon.
They're an all-male species.
It's an all-male species, but having being a female is a detriment, huge, and causes issues. The thing though, that there was an underlying message, I don't know how many people caught on to it, and you know, a lot of people right now with the political climate, you know, they're like, oh, girls versus boys, misogynist society, blah blah blah, but then they go to the court and they do the courtroom scene and the court decides that the baby has to be changed into a boy through the customary services stuff, and I'm just like, wait, is this really a commentary over male versus female, or, you know, the power play between the gender dynamics in a culture? Or is this a power play as to how far the parents get to say what their rights are over the choices of their child? Because ultimately, in the end, it was the courts who decided that the child should be transmuted from one gender to the other, not the parents.
Nor the child.
Nor the child. So I was like, is this actually the real message in here? Is who has the power over your children's choices?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the show was great because, I mean, I've had Star Trek guys be like, yeah, I actually prefer the Orville because it shows real people. They're not just, oh, we're in a more advanced society, so we are completely robotic.
Well, yeah, their conversation seems so much more realistic. Like, when they find out Bordas can eat practically anything, and they're, like, bringing him a cactus and shit. And he's just, like, mowing down like nothing.
Which was obviously a pastry and was awesome.
I know, but it's still, it's the kind of shit that you'd expect the underlings to do on a starship. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen to all the Navy stories from guys about the shit they pull while they're out on sea, you know?
One of my favorites on that is, it's a tale of laziness. It's been passed around Facebook and a few friends and whatnot.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
Where the XO shifts the course of the entire ship like 2 or 3 degrees and patiently waits while he's half zombied and drinking coffee and alters the course of thousands of lives so the sun isn't in his face.
Yeah, yeah. That's a classic.
Never leaving his seat.
And the Orville is a lot like that. It's one of the things that actually, after he told me about it, after Blasphemous told me about it, I was actually like, I'll give it a couple of episodes. And then I was fucking hooked, because even though it's a parody, the interactions between the characters seemed more realistic than they would on the other fantasy stuff, and it was a lot less of an exposition machine.
Right.
Which turned me off to Star Trek, like the Next Generation. Almost every line of dialogue is exposition to explain to us what they're doing. I'm like, normal people don't talk this way at all. Even their normal conversations are exposition. I'm just like, all you're doing to me is just explaining every scene. Stop it.
Which I did a lot of narration.
And I can only listen to Worf, you know, remind us that he's Klingon so many times per episode.
Which is why I really enjoy the Orville, because it gets to that point where they start to do that exposition and they're like, wait, just do it.
Just do it. Yeah. You know, and the new Star Trek has gotten such bad reviews from the internet corners that I travel in. Most of the responses are people giggling at it. Like, ooh, check out the new great Star Wars or Star Trek. It's so awesome. And people are like, haha, I've already heard bad things about it. I've already seen clips. Your show sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Stop trying to advertise your show as being the next great thing. And Disney's fucking up the same way with Star Wars. They're like, check out our new canon. And everybody's like, no. No.
Not a fan.
I mean, one of the reviews I watched about it was so great. It was, I think it was Honest Reviews. They mentioned that the planet at the end was made out of the real, the white salt on top of the planet was made out of the real tears of former fans.
Oh.
Just like, ouch.
Oh.
But the fact that it took an entire planet to be covered by the tears of former fans, it's kind of like a backhanded compliment in a way.
Right? It's like it shows us that we have passion.
Yeah.
And that passion is betrayed.
Well, no, I mean, it's to the point about the Star Wars stuff that I can't even put a joking post up without this one friend of mine.
That sounded like they were very close on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was doing dick fingers.
Sausage fingers.
Sausage fingers.
Yeah. Where he's just always like, oh, butt hurt, oh, you, blah, 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 you know, you're just mad, and I'm like, no, like, I was okay with The Force Awakens. I even was okay with Rogue One, even though it's super forgettable.
Both of the first ones were super forgettable.
But they were still okay, like, you could tell there was some message there, but it still had okay story. The biggest fault with Rogue One is you knew everyone was going to die. Because they don't matter anymore.
Yeah, and of course, the distinctive lack of fuzzy people.
Eh.
Now I know, how racist can they get with the new Star Wars? It's also human-centric.
I know, right?
Right?
Where's the inclusion?
Where is the inclusion?
But, I mean, with a
Trandoshan lives matter.
With this friend, air quotes, it's gotten to the point where if I post one more thing where I'm just joking around on a group that he's in as well, where it's just about joking, and he gets super serious and keeps private messaging me about it, that I'm just going to be like, all right, screw you, out, I'm done. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, even just ragging on something for the sake of, you know, let's find all the holes, that way we can enjoy the greater structure, you know.
That's a bit of a stretch.
Well, it's like I was telling him, the big problem that I have with the new Star Wars saga is it's so counter to the original saga. The new Star Wars saga is not a political commentary. Whereas if you watch the old one, you look at the politics of the times and look at the movies as they came out, the Star Wars movies, the originals and the prequel trilogies, they're more of a political commentary than anything else. Whereas the new trilogy, as it's being drummed up, is more of a political pile driver.
Yeah.
It's not a commentary. It's more of a really glossy propaganda film. Yeah. I'm just waiting for, you know, something to pop up on my screen that tells me, you know, that, I don't know, Poe leader is best leader, with marching music playing in the background or some shit. I'm like, oh yeah, go North Korea. I mean, go Poe Dameron.
Right. Yeah. But like the other side of this is, you know, like interestingly, and this was a little bit of a gaming tale I caught wind of on the interwebs, that said, you know, it was like opening night, they were showcasing a game, the Star Wars RPG, and this elderly couple stops in because they were already on their honeymoon. No fucking clue what Star Wars is at all. And, you know, a lot of the players are just having a lot of trouble getting through this. This elderly couple, man and a woman, comes in, and, you know, we heard that there was a game launch going on. We're wondering if we could do that. It's like, yeah. I mean, what do you know? And they're like, nothing. So showed them the little figurines for these are the good guy figures and these are the bad guy figures. And, you know, gave a brief overview of the Resistance, and the gentleman goes, oh, so like the French Resistance. Yeah. And this must be a space Nazi officer. And their troops are even called stormtroopers. They are the only group, according to this poster, who actually beat the introductory scenario. Especially since they did it sans Jedi. Because they rallied these, you know, miscreant kids, more or less, into a guerrilla fighting force in the same way the French Resistance did. And what's interesting to me about that is because I hadn't actually caught onto that, you know, as a benign little kid. I hadn't caught the fact that it was a political commentary until I was much older. But seeing that post is like, yeah, that's, it's interesting how the generation gap sees things.
It is. It really is. Yeah, that's one thing I, no matter how much I harsh on the prequel trilogies and everything, and Jar Jar Binks, I do give Lucas a lot of credit and leeway on the fact that they were political commentaries, and he's an artist with a vision, and he's trying to tell a story, even though he's not really good at it. And so, I give him credit for that, and right now, the mouse-eared overlord of the dark side is just out for cash. They really don't care as long as they're raking in money.
Right, and, like, this is such a detraction from how Disney used to be. Let's take The Lion King. That was a political commentary. Have you seen those hyenas?
Scar was right.
No, I'm not going to get into that.
When you psychoanalyze Scar, he was right the whole time. Screw Simba. Scar forever.
Cool. Moving on. You know,
is a lie.
You know, that was a distinctive political commentary.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there was old cartoons about things with, like, the Jim Crow ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Dumbo,
yeah. I forgot which film it was. I didn't really pay attention to it.
It's an elephant, I'll know it.
Okay.
Well, an elephant animals. Never forgets.
But, you know, things like that. And, you know, I've seen commentary from Disney in the past. Reasonably certain I shouldn't put much stock in it nowadays, but, like, they deliberately chose not to doctor a lot of the racist slurs that happened in those films because it would be misrepresenting history.
That, and I think that's one of the important things about any form of media, is that we do not change what has already been published in its form. I mean, Gone with the Wind has come under attack, for fuck's sake. That's a goddamn classic. It's one of the best movies ever made. Not in my opinion, but in the opinions of a lot of people who are professionals. And I've seen it multiples of times, and I'm like, it should not be censored in any way, shape, or form, just like the old Tom Sawyer books, because it is a glimpse back in the way history was.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know.
That's kind of the point of remembering history, is to be better than our predecessors.
Exactly. You know.
Disney has forgotten that with the Star Wars movies, for show.
In spades. Hey,
space.
Blasphemous.
Yeah.
You want to see Kazrakan light up like a fucking Christmas tree?
Do it.
Because I just remembered something that happened recently last winter that falls into this episode's category that will light you up.
Hit me with it.
All right, I'm gonna hit you with it. How do you feel about your favorite game publisher, Blizzard Entertainment, skirting with the whole SJW agenda? You've seen the articles. I've linked them to you.
And I have benignly ignored them.
You've ignored them?
I feel bad about this.
Oh my God.
In my defense, I had forgotten you sent them to me after a while.
Like, yeah, because they were getting a little SJW touchy-feely there for a while.
Yeah, and you know, on the flip side of this, so is Google, right? They're kind of riding that equality bandwagon a little bit, which is not bad if done correctly. If done correctly.
Nobody's doing anything correctly anymore.
Yes, well, that's the problem. But
we're like a bunch of piranhas that all have developed a taste for one another.
There's no winning.
There's no winning.
But, you know, Blizzard, like, I am sad that Blizzard has fallen prey to this malice and malady that is the SJW crowd. I'm very sad about this.
I figured that, of anything, they would latch onto the whole Blizzard deal, especially StarCraft, considering that Kerrigan is their poster girl. But apparently, her scantily clad outfits just out her as being just another tool of the patriarchy.
Which is amusing, because not once is it not to a point that everything from the head down is covered. It's skin tight, sure.
Yeah.
It's skin tight, but it's not lacking in the whole modesty department.
I know.
By any stretch. And, you know, they did it for a reason, and that reason is this is a stealth suit.
Yeah.
You don't stealth by showing cleavage. All right, that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
Nowadays.
Well,
nowadays it might work, but she's got other tricks to rely on. Like
I don't know. I was just visualizing Power Girl trying to sneak through the house, and I would be distracted. I would only see, like, a circle about 8 inches in diameter, about chest level, and the rest would just be invisible.
Well, that says where your eyes go.
Yeah, well, there's a boob window, come on. It's a window to the boobs. How can you ignore that? It's like a fucking bullseye for, like, millions of years of genetic programming to go, focus here. It's probably why she kicks so much ass against male supervillains, is because they're like,
it's
genetics. It's telling me to look right at the bullseye. So,
I mean, there is that aspect. And, like, a little webcomic I read for a while before it got kind of discordant with its timeline. It's called Spinneret.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Long story short, girl gets Spider-Man bitten, but instead of, you know, keeping the humanoid form, grows extra arms. How do you hide that? Fat suit! Run with it. And she's trying to petition her friend to make her a suit suitable for this new form. Well, she's actually the main character, Spinneret, is arguing for a boob window, and her friend's just like, are you serious? You're wanting to leave a clear line of shot to your heart when the rest of this material is effectively bulletproof almost because you want to show tits? Are you serious? And she eventually gets persuaded not to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it is, you know, when you're looking at it like that, you're gambling that distraction factors will work in your favor, and not some crack-ass marksman going, no more problem.
Well, it's like a older issue of Batman once explained when he took a shot to the chest, and Commissioner Gordon goes, oh my god, you got shot, and Batman's like, yeah, but he hit me in the chest. Why do you think I wear a giant yellow dot on my armor and not my face? Yeah. So he'd get shot at the easiest thing to see, which is where the armor's the thickest.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're doing it that way, that works. But things like, you know, the ghost armor for Kerrigan and Nova from the later series, that's functional armor insofar as a lightweight suit of stealth armor can be.
Well, if you look it up, and I'm sorry to drop this horse in your barn, but there are those...
You're not sorry.
No.
There don't are, fucking lie.
I know. There are feminists out there who are just, like, totally pissed about how skin-tight Kerrigan's outfit is, and going on about how she's not a strong whammon. Okay, so I got it right that time. Yeah, there are people who are actually pissed about that, thinking that she's like a tool to patriarchy and shit. I'm like, she is like...
The poster child badass.
For an entire faction that is threatening life in the galaxy as we know it. Just the hell.
And she cannot be... Not only, she on her own has, at the end of Heart of the Swarm, enough psionic power, the power of her mind, to fuck up planets.
Yeah, well...
Maybe not tear them apart, but fuck them up in a real good way on her own.
Apparently that she's... Some argument is always going to be made, and apparently she's not strong enough, or strong in the right ways, whatever. I don't know. So, let's see, we got your favorite Blizzard covered, because, yeah, they were fucking up. If I go and rip into the ZeniMax and the Creation Club, that's going to be an episode in its own.
We'll save that.
Because there is a lot of information in the background, and, again, it's pissed me off that modders and...
People who enjoy mods
and modders
are both getting shafted.
No, are all three getting shafted, because you got modders on the Forever Free side and modders on the, hey, we want to get paid side.
That's true.
And it's one of those topics I've put a lot of thought into, especially since I've dabbled in modding myself, and I'd prefer my shit to be Forever Free, but apparently there are other viewpoints out there. So.
See, I'm of a mindset, you know, if you're going to do mods, Forever Free is the best option, but you should, as a patron, support those modders who are doing work you like. Be that donation, be that like a Patreon or something. Something that, you know, it's
the problem is, especially with a lot of modders like Arthmore, who's a really big name, a lot of people don't really throw support out at them, or if they do, it's just a token of support. So that's part of the reason why they want more of a stable income. So, yeah, the Creation Club bullshit that ZeniMax and Bethesda by extension pulled with their ransomware is just a fuck-all nightmare. It is hideous. Let's see, we got Magic in there, we definitely got Star Wars and Star Trek. I totally spaced Star Trek.
No, we covered that for a bit.
Well, we also kind of covered it. Swear we've talked about this
before. I think we have talked about it before. So, pretty much... Did I miss anything in the last several months that we should be bitching about that's come out and pissed people off?
What's our time left?
Only a couple of minutes, but I'm sure I can edit it down.
I mean, loot boxes is the only other thing.
Oh, yes. Let's end with that. So, congratulations, listeners. We're going into overtime for a moment here.
Dun, dun, dun!
Because our favorite fucking game company ever...
Electronic Arts Entertainment,
whatever the fuck, EA game, has done once again, screwed the fucking pooch. And the best part is, it has actually gotten international attention over the loot boxes and online gambling. They're still in contention about it in the courts.
To this day.
To this day. And we are recording this just right at the very beginning of March. So
March 18th. For those who might or might not listen in the years to come.
Yeah. From the future. But yeah, EA Games has once again fucked up with their loot boxes. And it's landed...
Oh no, I did not miss the best part. Because it is still in court. Yes. But I was reading the other day on a few other websites. PCGamer.com had an article on it, as well as a couple of others. Disney is now courting the idea of taking their business to either Ubisoft or yet another developer and dropping EA from the exclusive rights entirely.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh.
I was reading up on this, and EA is right now shivering in their fucking boots because Disney, the Antichrist, is looking at the devil or whatever the hell the relationship works.
Mm.
And Disney's like, yeah, you done fucked up. We're going to think about strongly revoking your rights to have exclusive titles to our intellectual property.
Yeah.
That's a big fucking deal.
It is a huge fucking deal.
That's like the same kind of caliber as when Walmart stopped carrying HDD.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a linchpin. And when it finally does get yanked out, that grenade is just going to light right up.
Yeah, so EA right now is staring down the barrel of a very large cannon that says, fuck you. Because they done fucked up with the loot boxes. The reception from the game was so horrible that somehow, I don't know how EA have done it, but they are actually posting profits from the article that I was reading the other day, even though the last three games that they've published have tanked hardcore. Including in Mass Effect Andromeda, which effectively killed the fucking franchise.
Which is sad. Like,
it is sad.
Had potential. But
Mass Effect would have made a great. I cannot express how many greats without making video gaming great again. But Mass Effect could have been just such a fucking stellar MMO. If you did a looter, not exactly looter shooter, but just like shooter, skill-based MMO where the players come in and they are playing Spectres.
Yeah.
For the Citadel government and running missions as, like, teams. You know, because you've got your basic classes right there. You've got the sniper in there. You've got the brute. You've got basically the biotic medic combo you can go with. So you actually have a fairly stable group of guys with guns out there going out and doing Spectre missions.
Yeah.
It would have made a very interesting MMO, but they've killed their franchise entirely.
Right? And like, I would have loved to play that. That would have been so fun.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure, you're not commanding squads, but at that point, you've got a squad of people you can talk to.
You are. Well, they do state in the lore that some Spectres work together in groups.
Lo and behold. And then there's the solo ones. And guess what? There's probably missions for those, too, that mm-hmm. could be easily accomplished with one person.
And the first three games... The first three games, I mean, if they were to do an MMO and bundle the first three games into it at a discount price, by the time people get into the MMO, or even if they're playing the MMO and they just want to play solo, they would have a chance to delve into all of the lore, because they did a lot of background in the lore stuff.
Yeah.
So, you would know the aliens by heart by the time you're playing the MMO and get to level 20.
Yeah.
They had so much potential there. But The Sims...
Mm-hmm.
They fucking went, oh, look, we got this great IP. People are going to buy it just because it's got a name like Star Wars and kill it. That's Kazrakan making a stabbing motion with sound effects.
Yes. Oh, the pretty blood.
The pretty blood. So we got anything else, gentlemen?
No, I'm good overall. I mean, I'm definitely going to have to take a sit down for a minute and air out after all this.
Oh, yeah. What about you, Kazrakan?
I ain't got anything.
He ain't got anything. Well, I ain't got anything. And we are hitting the 1.5-hour mark, so that's a full episode. So thank you for listening, guys and gals. We will see you next episode.
Blasphemous signing off.
Kazrakan out.
Four, three, two, one, ready.